Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Meg Remy is an uncompromising musician, singer, producer, performer, and author who calls Toronto, Ontario home. Originally from Illinois, Remy is renowned as the driving force behind U.S. Girls, an incredible and prolific musical entity whose catalog has certainly been celebrated and acclaimed internationally, and particularly in her adopted Canadian home, where she's often nominated for awards and praised for her ambitious vision. The latest album by U.S. Girls is a compelling and energized one called Bless This Mess, which was partially inspired by Remy giving birth to twin boys, whom she's raising with her talented partner, the musician Maximilian Turnbull. Bless This Mess itself was born into this world on February 24th, 2023, via 4AD and also Royal Mountain Records, and Meg returns to this show to discuss her experiences and perspectives as a young parent, what having children can teach one about themselves, the visually stimulating and provocative videos for some of the new Bless This Mess singles, lyrical themes delving into progress, private property, and the last breaths of capitalist comforts, Daedalus, Icarus, and Stanley Kubrick, the fear of death, surviving versus coping, AI, and the deep fakery of social media, revisiting home videos she made as a kid who loved MTV, wanting to dance again, exciting future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into bringing you this podcast so often. So thank you out there, those of you supporting the show at patreon.com/creativecontrol. It's appreciated. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, and very friendly personnel who will happily help you find whatever it is you're looking for. Hey, say you want to order the new U.S. Girls album, Bless This Mess, or you want to order the whole discography by U.S. Girls. Well, head over to blackbird.ca, type in what you want, and sure enough, they might even be able to home deliver your U.S. Girls records to you or anything else you want. Again, learn more about this fine establishment at blackbird.ca. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in my beloved old Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 757 of Creative Control, featuring the idiosyncratic and brilliant Meg Remy of U.S. Girls, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Meg. How's it going?
I'm good, Vish. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Where in the world are you today?
Etobicoke, Ontario.
Are you... So, okay, there's a lot going on in that answer for me, because I know you a little bit. Are you still in the same place then? Okay, same place. But, additions. Congratulations. You have two children at once, right? That's what we established maybe the last time you were on.
Yes, two at once.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is it working out in that little... It's not that little. You have a nice place. I remember... I like your place, but is it working out with all the people?
Yeah, it's working out. It feels, okay. Make work with what you got.
Yes, absolutely. Well, like I say, congratulations. Obvious question from one parent to another. How are you holding up? Is everything exactly how you expected it to be, raising two children?
I don't know. I didn't have any expectations, I don't think, really. I'd say I'm holding up well, considering what the reality of the situation is, which is that, I wake up at 5 a.m. and I hang out with two almost two-year-olds all day till 5:30 p.m. when they go to bed. And I, in between that, do interviews and clean and... try to have a relationship with my husband, and when the boys go down, then I clean more and try to have some time for myself or do more work, or it's a very Groundhog Day situation. Mm-hmm. It's very draining. It's also extremely meaningful and almost overly meaningful. I like it. I like it, and I also don't like it.
Yeah, that all checks out. I was just going through my parental checklist. I think we are on the same page. Some of that stuff, yes. I'm sure you anticipated and expected. Have there been particular surprises for you in this dynamic, this experience so far?
I think just like my lack of patience. Yeah, I find it. I read something a woman said, I can't remember who it was, but, and I'll screw up the quote, but it was, which is too bad because it was really good. But she said something about how, parenting brings out her secret insanity. Mm-hmm. And I really relate to that. There's times where I feel completely insane with frustration and anger and. The lack of sleep, I think really contributes to that. And I was surprised by that element. I wasn't ready for that. But I think, you know, so much of it is that your kids are just reflecting you back at you. It's not really them when you're getting upset. So,
hey, have we talked about this? Because this is like a thing I say to everyone, and I feel like I've said it so much that it's like a, it could be a slogan for this show. That when I learned from my kids that when I'm angry at someone, I'm really a little bit angry at myself. I feel like that's the same for them. When they're upset, they're kind of, I don't know if I like I say, I've said this to a trillion people, and I feel like I'm an amazing armchair psychologist when I say shit like that. But then I'm like, but younger people, I would say, are like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. You know, and maybe it's obvious, but they are little reflections of you. So you're kind of little. That's what I think when I'm upset with them. I said it to my son yesterday because he made their sister feel so badly about something. And I got upset and I raised my voice. And then after I had to apologize and say, look, what happened actually, I thought about it. First of all, I'm sorry, but I think I was mad at you. I was angry with you because you remind me exactly of me. And that's how I sometimes was with my sister, and I regret it. And I don't want you making the same mistake. You know what I'm saying? They're a little like,
for sure.
So is that part of what's going on?
Yeah, but I just think everybody is that.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it's like when you see someone in a road rage and they're honking and screaming and stuff, it's like, it's something else in their life and they're honking and screaming at themselves. And it's like how to go through life trying to like instantly forgive those people and then also yourself when you do that. Because I think it's probably the most human trait, one of the most human traits there is.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I know I've congratulated you on being a parent and your children, and I appreciate your candor and just talking about what the experience has been like. Congratulations too on making another wonderful record with Bless This Mess. As you're talking about it with people like me and maybe pondering putting it up on stage, has that record surprised you? Is any revelations from just like, oh, it's done and what the hell? Holy shit, there's a lot going on. Anything like that happening already?
Not really. I don't feel like I have much space for revelations these days. But, I mean, it's just wild to me that I've been doing this for 15 years now.
Yeah,
That this project is still happening. Like, there's still fuel in there for it, for me. I've looked back a lot. Even like getting the live set up, and the live set has a real kind of tech angle to it, which is I've never touched before. And that's interesting to be someone who, you know, this project started off with a reel-to-reel and a microphone, and now there's like synthesizers getting sent MIDI data, playing themselves on stage, and all kinds of crazy shit. So
yeah,
it's pretty wild. Just even how the technology's changed of what is available and impossible in the past 15 years.
Yeah, I was watching the videos that, as we're speaking right now, for those who haven't seen them yet, there's three videos out for to promote the singles, if I may be so capitalist and crass. Beautiful, beautiful expressions, but they are singles. And I was marveling at those. They seem like technological feats in themselves, and they seem to be maybe even pondering technology and what it means to be whatever, development and what that means. And actually, so one of the videos, and I don't remember, sorry if it's, which is the one where you're trash, basically.
Futures Bet, yeah.
Yeah, Futures Bet, sorry. You know what we watched last night? Every Friday night, we have a movie night in my house at the family. We watched WALL-E. You remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of trash in that movie.
Well, it's similar in that the faces get compacted in the trash. You've seen this. Was this? I'm guessing this was not.
I've seen it a long time. It wasn't a reference, but I wish I had thought of it.
And I'm not. I just thought, what a weird coincidence that I'm watching WALL-E after having just watched this U.S. Girls video. Because I feel like where I'm coming from, and we can talk about the videos for sure, because I think they're really beautiful and interesting. But I feel like this record has been framed as one that reflects your recent experiences and your current experiences as a new parent. But I also feel like there's a lot of stuff that is of, you know, a universal time and place, like a lot of like technology, how we're interacting, how we're living. So what I'm getting at is, Meg, this clearly is a bit of a, I think the record is a bit of a document of what you're going through personally, and then maybe what you observe we're all vaguely going through. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what everyone else is going through fully, but we definitely, there's some things that we all share for sure. And technology is one of them. And it's one of the most fascinating and complex and confusing and tricky subjects. You know, it's how can you be mad at it? And yet it's completely, like almost fascistic, you know. So
But when you say technology, is there any chance that's a not a shorthand for capitalism, but it's an aspect of capitalism? Is that a way of looking at it from your?
I just think that maybe it's more just the word would be kind of progress or exponential growth, or the idea that's just because something can be done, it should.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I really believe in that on lots of levels. You know, it's So technology is probably more short for that, which obviously capitalism is a hot word, and it can a lot can fit underneath that, but that word almost feels like it doesn't even work anymore, or it's outdated. I mean, a lot of people say like, I mean, I think we're like in a collapsed capitalism now or something. It's not even potent. It's just, it's is.
I would agree with you. I guess what I'm picking up on with some of the imagery that you invoke, like a song like So Typically Now, and I'll just, if it's okay with you, I'm going to read a little bit to people. I'm going to read some of the lyrics. Brooklyn's dead and Kingston's booming. That's a real nice neck. Can I make it stop zooming? You moved upstate. So typically now, I'll send you an image if you would just calm down. Traders with loans, they run this show. So you sold off your condo. You're shutting it down. They're drawing it out. Like, I'm going to stop there. I don't want to just recite the whole song. But like, it's not only just capitalism in a kind of rudimentary university course 101. Like, what does this mean? Like, even the imagery in your videos seems to be about land usage. It seems to be about people building this. I don't know. I don't even know if you were trying to get at disposable homes, but these were like condo to me is almost as loaded a word as capitalism. And when people are leaving metropolises quite regularly now, it's not unusual for me to talk to musicians in Canada. And even someone wrote to me and said, "You moved?" I'm like, you're not in Ontario anymore, because they were figuring out a time zone. I'm like, yeah, because we couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
So we moved. And on the one hand, I struggle with this because that feels even, I feel like I'm gaming the system in a capitalistic way myself. Okay, well, they won't let us move our family around. We can't afford it. There's no jobs. We'll just move somewhere else and sort of colonize these spaces that are more affordable.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people are heading. They're leaving the cities because they're unsustainable and heading for suburbs. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make this about me, but I think you're speaking on some of these topics. Like, what does it mean that people are just trying to get away from capitalism, but also working within it to, you know, further themselves? Is any of that resonating with you in these songs?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's private property is something that I think about constantly. And how did private property become a thing? When did that start? You know, from what I can have found, and I'm sure I'm wrong, I don't know, but it seems that when the written word like when the alphabets started coming along, the written word, then the printing press is what really cemented it,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, everything runs on private property, everything. And yeah. that's the thing is like, yeah, you can't afford Toronto. So you leave somewhere where you can get private property.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And everything upholds it. The police do. So it's like discussions around police, I think, must start there. Private mm-hmm. property is, you know, the catalyst of the Catholic Church and them being one of, if not the biggest landowner in the world and all that came with that. And yeah, there's a lot there. I just think private property is... or real estate, you know, is a modern term or something, is something that we do just accept without really thinking about. Or you think about it in passing once. But I think it's something, yeah, we could use to or would be beneficial to think about it every damn day. Because it's wild. Yeah,
it is. I mean, it's interesting that... you know, I think there's more of an awareness of the nefarious aspects of landlord culture. But you raise a really interesting point because people are fleeing landlord culture to become their own kind of land barons themselves. That's a weird part of this.
There's nowhere to, you don't have to point, there's like nowhere to point fingers anymore. You know, it's like you can't call out them. You know, there's no them. Yeah. It's us.
Yeah.
It's just us and our, you know, a lot of it has to do with comforts and things that we just don't want to do without. And, you know, I think about it a lot with water. I just think about, I don't know. I really feel most days I'm going to step in the shower and I think, what if the water wasn't warm?
Yeah.
You know, and what a shock that would be. And how miserable that would be. Warm water makes life, it lubricates life.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, it's, and I think that is interesting to think about, like these comforts that we have. To have warm water, you don't feel a pain every day. Maybe you can avoid that shock of cold water, which could trigger your brain to think about uncomfortable things.
Yeah.
Or could train you to be okay with feeling uncomfortable or feeling pain. You know, we seem to be living in a time that wants to erase all discomfort erase it or own it. I'm not really sure, but I don't know.
Yeah. You know, as you're speaking, first of all, I think, you know, Meg, I have a lot of respect for you as a writer and for your opinions. And as you were speaking, I was pondering the fact that I feel like you were among the first, or well, you were among, maybe not the first, but you were among the people I interviewed at the onset of the pandemic. And your plans were all disrupted and all sorts of shit was going on. It was a very uncertain time. And you had this, you said some things that I thought were very grounded and philosophical. And then I was pondering what I guess is ostensibly the chorus of the song I alluded to earlier, Future's Bet. And the chorus is, when nothing is wrong, everything is fine. This is just life. This is just life. And I feel like everything you're saying kind of is encapsulated there. Like we're looking for trouble sometimes. Or we're looking to, you know, I'll people who listen to the show know I'm maybe struggling a lot with how to make sense of how we're behaving, given mm-hmm. the information we have that's accessible. But this kind of zen... Sorry, am I misreading it? I can't tell if it's sarcastic or zen.
It's both.
Yeah. So is that a kind of thing that grounds you? To just be like, yeah, this is just the way it is. Can't fight. There might not be warm water, and that's just the way it is. Like, are you getting to that place?
I mean... If I can hold that place and be in that place for a minute, I'm doing well. You know, it's a space I'd like to be in more. I don't think it's a space that anyone can be in all the time.
Yes.
Like, yes, there are Zen monks, but that's all they do then. Yeah. And they're removed from all other people.
Yeah.
so that they can hold that space and be there, because I don't think you can hold it. You definitely can't hold it living in Etobicoke with twins in a, like, it doesn't exist. But I try to get there, and it does, it's something that I've, is a tool for me. The, radical acceptance, if you want to call it.
Yes. Yeah.
Looking at the dual nature of all situations, and it makes things, I find it, it's comfort. It, talk about comfort. It's a comfort for me, and it just helps. Like, I am a person that has spent a lot of time trying to answer questions, and I do think that the more I try not to answer questions, the better I'm doing. Letting just the questions sit.
Sorry, the questions you ask yourself or the questions that are thrust upon you by by others?
I think all. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously I'm in an interview context, so I can't not answer your questions, and I would seem like an asshole then. But, you know, that. But an interview is kind of a good example for it, because it's, interviews to me seem to be like they're dialogues. They're not really, here's a question, here's an answer. Mm. It's, here's, I'm asking this, someone's asked me this question. That makes me think of this. I'm going to say this, and then they're going to say something else, and we dialogue on it. And there's no answer. Mm. Or there's an answer that's right for one day, and the next day the same question's asked, and it's a different answer because it's a different day, and the body feels differently or whatever. But I do think that particularly around the kind of big questions around why do humans act this way and this kind of thing, there's no answer. It's too, it's impossible. And to try to nail it down, which is what we all want to do, and why there's a million self-help books and all the things in the world. Hmm. And maybe even why language, you know, I think language in general is a control thing, and it continues to be so. I think even with a kind of large movement to try and reclaim language, trying to shift language, it's still a, someone is saying that this language is okay and this one's not.
Yeah.
And words fail always.
Yeah. You,
they always will, you know.
Well, to paraphrase what you're saying about oscillating opinions or you know, evolving thoughts, I will paraphrase your lyric again and say that is also just life. I mean, you know,
if we
were having this conversation tomorrow instead of right now, all the answers might have been different or could have been different. So,
For sure.
I found it interesting that this record in the sort of biographical promotion was being framed as Meg Remy contemplating motherhood. And then the first song is about a very, very famous father. And speaking of progress and inventions, again, I said before we started that my children really love your new album and were stoked. Yeah. They were like, you're going to talk to my son in particular. Was like, you're going to talk to this U.S. girl? So I'm like, yeah, Meg's been on the show a bunch of times. You know, I got cocky. I was like, yeah, Meg's friendly with me. Yeah. We have good talks usually. Uh-huh. Anyway, they're particularly obsessed with this song, and we had to talk a little bit about Daedalus and Icarus, and my son vaguely knew about Icarus. What is it about that dynamic, Daedalus? And I'm going to do a bare bones Cole's notes. My understanding is Daedalus was an inventor and the father of Icarus. Yeah. And then Icarus said, hey, I'm going to speculate. Icarus was like rummaging through the attic and found these wings and thought, oh, I'm going to go try and fly as high as I could. Am I capturing the story relative? And some details I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Sure, yeah.
So what? That's an interesting, all of this is interesting to me, given what we've just been talking about parenting, progress, inventions, their inherent peril. can you talk about why that him and that family dynamic spoke to you as you were pondering the song?
Well, I think because I ended up reading other stories about Daedalus. So it was interesting to me that, you know, he's kind of been nailed to this one story and how that happens to us in general. Yeah. We do one thing, maybe quote unquote wrong in our life, and that's it.
Yeah.
that's what you're associated with, and that's who you are then for the rest of your life. You know, when he invented the labyrinth.
Yeah.
You know, like he, all of these other things that he did, and those are not, we just focus on this one story. I found that interesting.
Hmm.
And just so now, felt very now. And yeah, it got me thinking about if your father was an inventor, or to have a lover who's an inventor. This kind of, it set me on that trail. I don't know. We ended up, Max and I recently were watching this interview with Stanley Kubrick. He was accepting an award.
Hmm.
And he was talking about Icarus and saying, you know, everyone says that the takeaway from the Icarus story is, you know, don't be too ambitious. Don't fly too close to the sun.
Yeah.
Because look what happens.
Yeah.
And he said that he felt that the moral of the story was really that you need better wings.
Mm.
And I thought that was very hilarious. He delivered it with his very deadpan manner that he had. but I think that was great as well, you know. And that just kind of comes back to myths in general, my interest in them and why I find them useful is because everyone can have a different take on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But unfortunately, myths have kind of been compressed over all this time to be one thing.
Right.
Like a news item, you know.
There's a one moral. There's a soundbite moral usually.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of these are sounding boards for contemplation, for thinking about reflecting your own life off of them, these kinds of things. Which is how I like using myths and stories as, yeah, just imagination drugs or whatever, imagination growers or something. Just get the brain thinking about all the facets of a character or a situation. So
it's very interesting to hear your take on that via Kubrick's notion that maybe Icarus just needed better wings. The last chorus basically is, then you die, don't get too high on your daddy's supply. Like that's funny, of course, on some level, but then you've it's in these takes that you're describing between you and Mr. Kubrick there. It's fascinating to me because I was fixated on what does it mean that the father invented the son, if you will. I mean, not the sun in the sky, but invented the child.
Yeah.
And then invented the very thing that took the child's life. Like, to me, there's a nod of
parental. But you do. You do. Yeah. You invent your child's death when you birth them.
That's okay.
You know?
Right. Yes.
Like, you, to say, I'm going to have a child. I'm so happy about its birth. You must, or there's no must, but it makes much more sense to confront the death at the same time to me.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It's awful. That's something that, like, that's a something to talk about what you're saying earlier. Of, is there anything I didn't expect or that surprised me about being a parent? And it's like death. I'm walking hand in hand with the death every day.
Yes.
I'm thinking about it every day. Yeah. I'm thinking about finding my child dead. I'm thinking about being old in a bed and saying goodbye to my child as they're sitting with me. I'm always all of this stuff going, and the fear of death, and what is that, and just that thing that I knew before, but now I feel it, and I accept my part in the lineage of what is the door that is that death, that birth and death is the same door.
Are you sorry when you say you're thinking about it all? It's so I will confess to you and everyone, I guess, listening, because it's not just you and me right now. I always sometimes I forget that. I have flashes of this in the nighttime when I'm trying to fall asleep. I have that's when the horrific it'll just like I'm just drifting off and a horrific image about my family or my children will hit me briefly and then it'll go. But I have shuddered in the bed and
it's
a glimmer. It's not something I fixate on. Well, I mean, maybe subconsciously here these days, you know, my hey, don't forget your mask, you know, wear the mask and do that. We do a lot of kind of stuff, you know, we're still doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. Obviously look, be careful with the cars. You do all that stuff. But I mean, that's not, for me, that's not terror. That's just, yeah, just be mindful of life. Like as you're living.
Yeah.
But at night, I do have these things. So are you saying, are you, I'm just trying to get at how healthy, I appreciate your self-awareness of these thoughts, but are they constant?
Yeah, I don't think it's, yeah, it's not every moment,
okay.
I think nighttime is definitely a big time for it.
Yeah.
It's like a lot, like the kids were just sick.
Yeah.
And a lot around that, like, yeah. Okay, like they were just crying a bunch and now they're not. Did they just stop breathing and they're dead? You know, like...
When it's quiet, it's weird. When they're noisy all the
things,
time,
you're like, yeah. Yeah,
and then they're quiet yeah. and asleep, it is
but
weird. Yeah.
I can say, I mean, I think about it every day, which I think is constant, considering that I think most of us don't do everything we can not to think about it. You know, like
yeah.
I really feel that our... Because thinking about death is an uncomfortable feeling. Just like you're sitting somewhere and you have a moment of silence and that's uncomfortable, so you pull out your phone.
Well, don't you think all of life is just fending off the despair?
Yeah.
If you think about I think I've said it a few times recently. Like, I get lost in comedy so I don't have to think about the fact that I feel like everything we do, we work, we make things, we're just, sorry, this is going to sound reductive, but aren't we just killing time every time we wake up?
But why, it's funny, like, why is there this despair?
Because we...
Is it a despair, you know?
Well, you said it earlier, because we actually fundamentally know we're born to die. That's why there's despair.
I know, but why? Well, I wonder why we don't like that. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I see.
And is it just because, like, we can't? Once you're conscious of yourself, you just can't face not the possibility of not existing, or that there'll be no consciousness, or is it just because it's such an unknown that you just can't compute it in any? You can't settle in any way. So it's this. I don't know. It's just, why is it? I think about it a lot because of relation to I always think about spiders. Like, why are we inherently scared of spiders? Is it because they used to be like 6 feet wide a long mm-hmm. time ago? You know, and like, that's why. But I think it's because, I don't think they were huge, but some of them are really poisonous and we knew that.
Right.
And we knew this thing. I don't know if this one's poisonous or not. So I'm just going to be scared of all of them because this thing can... end me.
Sure, there's that kind of fear of the foreign. Sure, I can appreciate that, and not the uncertainty. This is going to sound maybe completely idiotic, Meg, but isn't death the ultimate form of FOMO?
I think so, and I just wonder why that is, when it seems like it's just like we have so many reps in as being humans that born and die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we got the reps. Like, we have our 10,000 hours as experts of being born and dying. Like, that we haven't yeah. gotten anywhere with kind of always, like, I think we all always want to say, like, the past was better, or people were, like, more in touch with nature, so they had better things. But I think that when life was more difficult and you didn't have the comforts of the warm water, you didn't have the I want to order one cookie to my door,
yeah.
or just like I know the what maybe what the weather's going to be tomorrow, or like just these things, that I just have a sense that death was, it was more seen as a gift.
No, okay, so my relationship with life and death has changed since I became a parent, because
yeah.
I've used this reference a bunch of times. Like, I would not probably, the way I did in my 20s or 30s, drive when I lived in Ontario from Guelph to Toronto to see a concert and maybe not leave Toronto till 3 a.m, barrel down the highway at 120 kilometers an hour by myself.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't do that as willingly now, because I feel like some people really count on me to be alive, my kids. Sure. So that's, everyone listening right now has had a different, will have a different relationship with what it means, to have, a good life and, to avoid death. We're obviously seeing that, with, everything we've gone through where people try to find loopholes into, paying attention to what's going on and whether or not mm-hmm. they get this thing that everyone's saying can limit your life, you know, but you're seeing people like, I've got it 2-3 times. Who gives a shit? You know? And they're like, but the thing.
Yeah.
I haven't really articulated this out loud to anyone else, but like, are people really valuing life at all? Like, because people will say, when I say, I'm cautious, I don't go to restaurants, I do whatever, they say, well, what do you mean? So you don't have a drink, you don't smoke, you don't do the, and I go, actually, I don't do those things. I've never done those things. I think I was just preternaturally mm-hmm. nervous about fucking up my health mm-hmm. so that because I want to live. For some reason, as much as I have some issues, I'd like to live and survive.
Yeah.
And I've chosen some things. I have a sweet tooth, Meg. I like sugar. But otherwise, I try to not do a lot of stuff where I'm like, every scientist says alcohol and certain kinds of intoxicants aren't good for you, really. So maybe don't do them. And I've always felt a little like a freak for that. And now we're here and mm-hmm. I'm seeing it all over the place where people are like, I don't care, you know, but I got kids and I don't want them to get sick. And I don't want them to have any I want them to have the best life they can is where I'm coming from. And if I can be a part of that, I'm not trying to say I want to see how the story ends, but there's probably a little part of that. I don't want the story to end because it's still happening. And I have so much love and joy in my heart for that part of it, that's really what keeps me going. That's why I work the jobs to have the money and to make sure they're good. So sorry, that was a little bit of a rant. Do you see where I'm coming from? Has your relationship with death actually changed?
It's making me think like that maybe what has occurred, and I don't know where it occurred, put some arbitrary marker down, say post-World War II or something, but like where there was some switch that changed from survival to coping.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because you saying, I used to drive, I used to go to shows and then drive home. Like that was your way of coping with life. You needed to go to those shows.
Yes.
You needed to go. You had to be there.
Yeah.
And that was how you were coping, making meaning, all the stuff. Now you cope with your kids.
Yeah.
And
fair enough.
And that's where you're making your meaning. And like, I know, like I spent a lot of time and maybe we talked about this before, but like, I had a therapist this one time who I was talking about a coping mechanism that I kind of did. And then they were like, wow, that's so cool. You know? And I was like, what? And they were like, that's so cool that you knew to do that, that you like knew that you needed to do that. And look, it got you through the situation. That's so great. You should really thank yourself and say, good job. And then say, I don't need that anymore. Hmm. And that opened up a whole new thing for me of getting rid of a lot of shame.
Yeah.
When I look back on that, I had to drink a lot at those times.
Yeah.
Because I needed to seek oblivion because of this and this and this. And like, I was coping. I'm still living. So it worked.
Yeah.
But like, we now, it seems like, coping is different than survival.
Yeah, no, that's a really astute way of looking at it. Yeah.
Coping is like more emotional, it seems, and more like, where survival feels like more nuts and bolts, you know, which where a lot of us are so removed from the nuts and bolts of survival. Like just talking food, water, you know what I mean? Like we get it, but if the avenues went down of how it gets to us, what would we do?
Is coping the same to you in this definition as trying to rationalize things? I'm trying to make a distinction here because
I don't know about that. I don't know. Cause I don't even know about rationalization. Like maybe that's part of it.
I'm just trying to figure out the distinction there. Like what I was saying earlier about how we fill our days to ward off despair, I wonder if the shorthand is coping. So
I think so. And then like, because we're wanting to ward off that we don't actually know how to survive. Without all this shit.
Yeah.
That we've built up on top of our innate skills and the gifts that this planet gave us that allowed this symbiotic thing to occur for us to like live and other things to live off of it and give and take.
Yeah.
Like that's been completely decimated.
Yeah.
It still exists, but like we can barely make it out because we've put this whole theater on top of it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No, I agree. I appreciate your perspectives on this. I'm mindful of the time, Meg, because I know we both have other appointments. Are we good for a little bit longer? Are we
sure? Okay. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Because I feel like we've only scratched the surface on a couple of things. I want to ask you. I was alluding to these brilliant videos, and I was thinking about Bless This Mess. The video for Bless This Mess I found really fascinating, and I think it maybe pertains to our conversation, or rather, aspects of this conversation about parenting, children being a reflection of you and vice versa, I suppose. But where I'm coming from is, I have found that being a parent also makes me ponder my own childhood. And you've written a very powerful book about this that I believe that's the last time you were on, to talk about, I hope I'm not mangling the name, Begin By Telling. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bless This Mess. Sorry. Can you characterize this video? Cause I wasn't sure if it was some sort of, monkey business with technology. It seems to me that something's going on here, but no, it's not at all.
No, you know, Evan Gordon.
Yeah.
He just edited it. He just made it by hand. Like he was the AI.
So for those who haven't seen the video yet, Meg, it says the thing usually, sorry, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it says December 30th, 1998, the way like a what do they call it? Like a handy cam would say the date of the video, date stamp. Is that date accurate?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And it's video of you, from that period. How old are you roughly around that 1998?
I'm 13, I think, 13. Or 12.
And you had access to one of those cameras.
Yeah, it was just my parents or my mom's, you know?
Right. And so where I was confused is 13-year-old Meg seems to be singing the exact words from this song from 2023, Bless This Mess. This is a manipulation, right?
Yeah, no, I'm actually singing Human Waste Project songs into the camera. I don't know if you were ever aware of that band, but they were a band from California that I found out about because I liked Korn, and they were like... Jonathan Davis like sang on one of their songs.
Oh, okay.
So I was singing Human Waste Project songs into the camera just to see what I looked like and what I sounded like. And because at that point in my life, I thought that making, you know, like a way of making music was making music videos.
Yeah.
Because that was my only interaction with music really was through music videos.
Yeah. So the lion's share of the video is the equivalent now of someone, you know, doing like a selfie video, I guess is the way to put it. But there's also performance footage. Were you in high school or something performing?
Yeah, I'm in high school. It's like my first band.
Right. So I guess I just wonder, given the context, like, and what I led this question as being like the reflection upon our own youth as we look at our children. That part of the choice of, for that particular song, marrying it to images of you as a kid? Is that an obvious connection there?
I think that, when I got the footage, I got like 4 boxes of stuff from my mom's house that were like the last of my things that my mom had. You know, some stuff gets left behind. And these boxes had some VHSs in them, and I knew what some were on some of them, and then I didn't on the others. And when I got them transferred and got them back, you know, I saw all that footage of me singing into the camera, and it was, I couldn't even show Max. Because I put the USB stick in that they did the transfer in. I'm like, we start watching it. I was like, oh my God, no. Like, you can't see this.
It's mortifying.
I need to watch this on my own first. Because I also don't know what I'm going to do on here.
Right.
Because I used to do all kinds of crazy shit with that video camera. So I'm like, okay, what's coming next? And also, it's just so uncomfortable. Like, this is making me want to die.
Mm.
It was so, I felt like I was being crushed by the ceiling. It was so embarrassing. And
really?
Then when I went through it, there was just so much of it. And it was so shocking to see me at that age and how I'm basically the same person, but also that like I don't acknowledge that person enough. Like I think that I can like I've created a persona for myself around music that's like laid back. Like I don't really care that much. Like I'm not looking for fame. Like you know what I mean? And that it was like seeing this person
right.
who was so steeped in MTV culture
yeah.
and trying to look like cool and sexy and wanting to be desired and wanting to just be cool, and that's still inside of me, and that I've just tried to act like it's not, but
I see.
It just was so apparent that footage, I needed to exercise it. And I mean it like in an exorcism kind of way, like it needed to become public.
Yes.
I needed to just put it out there because it made me feel such intense feelings that it seemed like other people have done this kind of thing and people are doing it now. You know, it's not strange. Like that was exceptional then.
Yeah.
Now I don't think it is because everyone films themselves all day long, especially kids. And yeah it just, and it being paired with Bless This Mess, part of it was a necessity thing is that song had like the least amount of words and was slow paced. So it was going to be easy to edit it because I looked into AI stuff like, okay, what's possible with this? And it was far too expensive. And it was also just, it scared me.
Yeah.
The process of it, I was like, this is strange. I don't want to touch that. Like I'm interested in AI and I don't have any sense of like AI is bad.
Well, the deep fake stuff, it's called deep fake. I mean, it doesn't sound good. Does
I know, it? I know. But, don't get me started on that, but like, cause I think everything's deep fake sure. basically, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what we do. That's what we all do. Yeah. That's like the curation of our image via our social media, where we're picking each photo and how we look
for sure.
and like what, yeah. and how it's breaking down that like, we don't want to interact in public and in face to face as much anymore because you can't control how you look every second and you can't have a filter on you when you're in front of someone. What if you fart?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like you have something happens that's unexpected. What if your body speaks up? Like, but anyway,
that's a good point.
Once it was like, oh, it should go with, it also just seemed to go with Bless This Mess because I needed to just accept that footage.
Right.
And be like, that's me, you know what I mean? Like that's so me and this is me now. And just, yeah. What? And it's funny because I thought I destroyed that footage when I was younger, you know, cause I used to do a lot of taping of myself doing things like, and there's a small clip in the video as well of me. I'm a little bit older and I have glasses on and I have like a bandana on my head and it's like 12 at night. It's like midnight.
Yeah.
And I remember filming myself because I wanted to see what I looked like from each angle because I wanted to talk to someone at school the next day.
Oh.
That I had never talked to before.
Right.
And I like remember taping myself to watch it to see what I looked like. And I mean, there's just so much there.
It's interesting that you seem to have landed. Initially, your initial thoughts as it was coming on is, oh, the vanity. Oh, my God. Yeah. What was going on? But it's interesting because my take on it, and I know some of it is AI oriented, but I was like, oh, Meg was confident even then. Like I picked up on a certain level of confidence. You call it zen. I will also say I think most displays of confidence are rooted in insecurity.
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah, but
100%. And that was something I had to admit to, and that's something Max said about it too. Like that footage just really touched him because, like, the faces I'm making and stuff, he sees me make on stage now.
Yeah.
You know, because it's an act.
Yeah. It's an act of self-defense.
Even though it's me, it's me acting me.
Yeah.
It's just that version of me. And yeah, that video, I'm very proud of that.
It's great.
As an artifact.
Well, I'm happy for you because like I said, there's a lot swirling around in this record. The one thing I wanted to ask you about, because you have some really brilliant collaborators on here. And songs like Tux, like we've talked about some very serious things, and I feel like maybe there's a serious aspect to a song like Tux, or I don't know. I'm not going to delve into all of them. All I want to, I just want to say we really love that song. And I laugh every time I read the lyrics, and maybe I'm not supposed to. You can tell me what you think.
No, it's funny.
That's a funny one? Okay, good. I like that one.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is overall, beyond, if you want to highlight any collaborators in the time we have left, please do. But what I really wanted to talk to you about is beyond Bless This Mess and maybe a couple of other anomalies that aren't coming to mind right now, pretty upbeat record. I feel like sonically, you've done a really magical thing with that. Getting a heavy, you do this a lot. I find you talk about heavy stuff and critical sort of stuff, but it's always packaged in a really upbeat frame. I find most for the most part. So I assume that might be purposeful. And so I'm going to talk about some heavy shit or a shit that I think is important and heavy. But I got to make it a little sweet. I want to make it so that it goes down easy on some level.
Yeah.
Can you want to talk a little bit about the musical arrangements here? Or were you coming at these from a particular, you know, overarching aesthetic approach?
I think it's a really big topic. Like, each song was made so differently on the record. It was such a piecemeal thing done over such a long period of time. You know, I've never made a record that took me 2 years to make.
Yes.
It's never been done that way before. Yeah. But I would say overall it was a kind of, to talk about acceptance, but like accepting synthetic sounds, accepting MIDI and its capabilities and how it was a useful tool, making a record in lockdown, making a record pregnant, making a record on a budget, that kind of thing. And just, I was just missing dancing.
Yeah.
I still am.
That's what I, you know, that's just what I pick
really
up on.
Really, honestly, I miss dancing. I miss performing. I haven't been on a stage in 3 years, Vish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the longest I've gone since I was 15 years old. Since that footage in the Bless His Mess video when I'm playing my first show ever, I haven't gone a year, you know, not playing a show. So I just miss dancing and feeling. Yeah, feeling that feeling. So I think that's the main thing running through it.
Yeah.
And also I think the sound is maybe lighter because I think I'm lighter, you know.
Yeah.
I think heavy light and poem and half free and stuff, those were records that were, I was pretty angry and wounded, and I'm still very wounded and I still have a lot of anger, but I'm just, it's like I've uploaded it to a cloud. And I'm much lighter now. I don't have to carry it all around anymore. And I can, you know, it's like it's there, but it's not, it's just not coloring everything the way it used to.
Yeah, I can pick up on that kind of galvanizing, like, let's get on the dance floor stuff. Even, and then specifically songs like Screen Face, I feel like really do a wonderful job of getting at our sense of disconnection. And I can just hear that in you here. So I appreciate this conversation, Meg. Again, I'm rudely mentioning how much time we don't have left. Can you just tell us what is next for you? I saw you got a bunch of tour dates. Is there anything else coming up next that you can tell us about? And also, if people want to learn more about US Girls, where would you like to direct them? Can you answer those questions?
What's next? Yeah, we're doing some shows. New live band is totally wild. It's a next level thing I'm very excited about. I'm working on another book. I got a grant.
Awesome.
Which is very wonderful to write a book. So it's a work of fiction this time around.
Oh, cool.
And who knows when that will be finished, but I'm working on it. And some other songs coming out here and there. I'll just say I have a song with a funk legend that is coming out this year that is pretty wild.
Oh, amazing.
So that will be happening. I can't say any more about it, but it's probably,
wow.
The greatest thing that Max and I have ever gotten to do. And if people want to know more about US Girls, just get on that Mr. Google.
Right. All right. That's where they're going to find
it. Type it in.
All right.
Fair. Google has all the answers about US Girls.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. If we can go out on a song from Bless This Mess for people to hear, I wonder if you can pick one and tell us why you chose it.
I would pick Just Space for Light.
Oh, and why is that?
Yes. Well, it's a cover of a Badge Epic ensemble song. Jennifer Castle originally sang the original version.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new version of it. I feel like this is my favorite. This is probably my favorite song on the record. I think it sounds like The Little Mermaid.
I appreciate your diplomacy. Your favorite song on the record is a cover, ostensibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
All right.
I really wanted to sing this song, like when Badge was making that record.
Mm.
The song that was chosen for me to sing was Sing a Silent Gospel, which was the right choice for my voice. And Doro and I got to sing it together, and it was great. But I really wanted to sing Just Space for Light. But I understood Jennifer getting to do that one. But I vowed I'd always someday I would do my own version. So,
all right. Well, that's, yeah. Congratulations on all your achievements, getting what you want from
Thanks.
From the wonderful new U.S. Girls album, Bless This Mess. This is Just Space for Light. Meg, I don't mean to make you uncomfortable, but I do love you very much. Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Thank you, Vish.
And I hope we talk again soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Mostly be silent. I close, tie both my eyelids. Looking up to find my love. A divine creation. Slow play of light.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's so nice to have Meg Remy back on the show. I just did a quick count. That was Meg's fifth time on the show talking about U.S. girls and other stuff she does. Meg, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making time for me and for everyone else. As I say, this is Meg's fifth time on the show, this time appearing on the 757th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, like one of those old, older episodes with Meg, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show directly on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkhanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast running. Now you can set any amount you want. You can set $6, $7. You could even set your amount at $8 a month, and then you can change it. You can make it higher, you can make it lower, you can quit altogether. Whatever it is that pleases you, you can do with Patreon. Now, that is the primary source of revenue for the work that goes into this podcast, and it's very much appreciated. There are some perks at certain levels. You can get episodes earlier than everyone else. You can access exclusive content that isn't available on the free feed. All sorts of treats, I think. And t-shirts. If you want a t-shirt, a Creative Control t-shirt, I still have a stock of them. Contemplating doing a sale just for fun. I haven't done that yet. Anyway, if you want a t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and maybe we can figure something out. I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again for supporting the show on Patreon and by listening to it and all those sorts of things. Thanks again to the amazing Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. You can order things right from that website, blackbird.ca. Also, thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. It's been so long, all of this in-kind support. Thank you to those places. Thanks also to my friend Jim Guthrie, who's also been my friend for so long. And he lets me use some music of his on the show. And you can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Meg from U.S. Girls. I hope you will dig in to Bless This Mess and go see U.S. Girls on tour and check out the rest of Meg's catalog if you're unfamiliar with it. Amazing, amazing artist. And thank you for subscribing to this podcast or following it and telling your friends about it and maybe encouraging them to do the same and spread the word about Creative Control. It means a lot. All right, I'm going to go now and start to make dinner for my family. I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.